Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast from WNYC in New York.
The joy of creating. Force yourself to smile, and you'll soon stop frowning.
Here is the late, great soul singer Isaac Hayes, like you've never heard him before.
Wax enthusiastic, and you'll very soon feel so. A being causes his own feelings. The greatest joy there is in life is creating. Splurge on it.
This poem he's intoning was composed by L. Ron Hubbard, the science fiction writer and founder of the highly controversial Church of Scientology. Turns out Hubbard employed a fair amount of music in his fiction and his religious beliefs late in life. Nathan Rabin recently wrote a piece for the online magazine Slate exploring L. Ron Hubbard's musical output. It's called L. Rock Hubbard, Revisiting the Curious Career of the Ultimate Cult Musician. You can find a link to it at soundcheck.org, and Nathan Skypes in from Chicago. Hey, Nathan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So explain briefly who L. Ron Hubbard is and why you were interested in his music.
Well, L. Ron Hubbard is one of the most fascinating people in the history of the world. I think I can say it without danger of hyperbole. And he was a very, very prolific science fiction author. Scientologists would tell you that he's one of the best and most popular science fiction writers of all time, / writers of all time. Other people are less charitably inclined. Mm-hmm. And he basically established this religion called Scientology that has a very interesting ideology. It's very, very controversial. He himself was extraordinarily controversial, especially towards the end of his life. I mean, the 80s, L. Ron Hubbard had basically gone into seclusion. People had no idea where he was. He hadn't made any public appearances in a very, very long time. So people naturally assumed that he was dead or he was being held captive or abducted for some reason. So, and to the point where his son sort of filed a motion to kind of get himself appointed the guardian of his father's estate. So, you know, so that he could control it. And he sent out this affidavit saying, not only am I not dead, but I have secluded myself like Walden. And I have this crazy, crazy outpouring of creativity coming up, one of which was this album called Space Jazz, which would be the soundtrack to Battlefield Earth. And again, it's very interesting to kind of look at the historical context for this. Mm-hmm. So this was 1982. So what were the big things in popular culture? It was Star Wars. It was Star Trek. It was E.T. And Scientologists are like, we not only have a man who has unlocked the secrets of the human mind, we not only have the wisest man in the world, we also have the world's greatest science fiction writer. It would be like as if Jesus Christ had also created Star Wars. And L. Ron Hubbard was a big thinker. He had big ideas. So his idea was, I'll put out this book, Battlefield Earth. It will be the greatest science fiction novel ever written. And for the record, it is Mitt Romney's favorite book of all time, for what that is worth. And then there would be this soundtrack album, which had never been done before, where somebody made a soundtrack not to a movie or a Broadway show, but to a book. And it had never been done before because it makes no sense.
Well, let's hear a little bit, you know, having been warned that what we're about to hear might not be the ultimate in, in musical experiences. But Space Jazz from L. Ron Hubbard, let's face it, he had a lot of great musicians there in the Church of Scientology, still does. Chick Corea, right. the keyboard player, the bass player Stanley Clark among them. And you hear both of them in this clip. The song is called Earth, My Beautiful Home.
Right.
All right, so that's Earth, My Beautiful Home, Space Jazz, 1982 album by L. Ron Hubbard, the sci-fi writer and founder of the Church of Scientology, keyboardist Chick Corea, bass player Stanley Clark, both performing on this record. But the album is credited to L. Ron Hubbard, right?
Right. And all of the four albums that I kind of wrote about for the piece, he's credited not only with providing the lyrics, but for writing the music as well, which is, yeah, kind of a strange combination there. And you couldn't see me, but I was snapping my fingers in approval to some of that swinging space jazz, man. And that is about as good as it gets. And that is one of the things, kind of interesting paradoxes that I was exploring in this piece, is how can so many brilliant artists be Scientologists, yet Scientology art be so unbelievably terrible. And I think it's worth noting that, you know, these albums were not created by, say, Beck. You know, Beck is a Scientologist.
Right.
And if Beck were to make an album based on his faith, A, people, I think, would see it as some sort of elaborate postmodern joke. I think if some of L. Ron's lyrics were credited to Beck, they'd be like, oh man, what a brilliant subversive postmodern deconstruction of, you know, mythologies. And not the ravings of a madman, but oh my God, what an interesting aberration. And when people say, you know, like, boy, that is one of the weirdest, worst albums of all time, that is true.
We're speaking with Nathan Rabin, who writes for TheDissolve.com, about his recent piece for Slate.com called L. Rock Hubbard, Revisiting the Curious Career of the Ultimate Cult Musician. You can find a link to it on our website, soundcheck.org. Chick Corea is, you know, we heard him playing the piano a moment ago, but also on this record, he plays the Fairlight CMI, which stands for Computer Music Instrument. I remember, you know, this instrument gained quite a lot of currency in the early 80s because it was basically a kind of sampling keyboard. You know, you put any sound into it and then play it back anywhere on the keyboard. Why was that instrument so important to the ethos of L. Ron Hubbard's musical world?
Well, I think, you know, L. Ron Hubbard there are two parts to L. Ron Hubbard's personality and to his persona, one of which was the greatest science fiction writer of all time, and the other of which is the messiah of humanity. You know, they kind of built into one another. And the science fiction writer, you know, was very concerned with how can I create music that is the equivalent to these books that I've written? And I think the answer was to create, you know, science fiction-y instruments, things that sounded futuristic, things that sounded like what tomorrow might be, things that sounded like you might see in Star Trek. And that's one of the kind of neat things of kind of going back and looking at these albums, is they wanted to sound like the distant future and they sound like the distant past. Ron Hubbard never really got to make movies. So this was kind of his attempt to, like, I will make a movie just using sounds and instruments and words and do so in a way that is completely incoherent, that only Scientologists can really appreciate.
Let's go back to that 1982 record, Space Jazz, and hear this.
Oh, must we?
Yes, this instrument of the future, the Fairlight CMI, which now does have a kind of a dated early 80s sound, on a song called Wind Splitter. What the hell was that?
Old saloon in Andromeda 7. And again, I think that's, you know, sort of L. Ron's opportunity to, like, work in all these different genres.
With the kind of fake horse neighing and fake galloping sounds.
Yeah, your saloon piano. It's all there, man.
Nathan Rabin Skyping in from Chicago. You have to read the article, L. Rock Hubbard, Revisiting the Curious Career of the Ultimate Cult Musician. The link's on our website, soundcheck.org. I have to ask you, what kind of reaction have you gotten to this?
Well, the reaction that I got from my wife was...
That's not what I'm interested in. Have you heard from the Scientology department?
I have not heard from the Scientology community, but on Friday, somebody hurled a rock through my bedroom window, which is something.
Seriously?
Yeah, which is something that has never happened to me before, and I'm not quite paranoid to imagine that it had something to do with writing an article about Scientology. But it is something that has happened before in the past, where Scientologists have not looked favorably upon people who have written about them in a less than reverent fashion.
Which this article certainly is not reverent. The album Mission Earth is an L. Ron Hubbard project that you say actually rises to the level of mediocrity because it is performed by Edgar Winter, the classic rock guitarist from the 70s.
He does, and it's a really, really bizarre project where it is an adaptation. Again, it's an adaptation of one of L. Ron Hubbard's novels, although I guess in this case it is a 10-novel set, a decalogue. And one of the things that's kind of crazy about Mission Earth, the book, is apparently within it, I have not read it, it's like 5,000 pages long, like all of Ron Hubbard's stuff. Apparently it presents rock and roll music, like homosexuality, like a lot of other things, as being kind of this like very negative, destructive cultural force that people have to be on guard against. So the fact that it was then turned into a rock opera, I think is pretty, pretty fascinating. And it's not a great album by any stretch of the imagination, but it is so committed. And Edgar Winter just throws himself into it with this kind of lunatic abandon. In the piece, I kind of compare his commitment to that of John Travolta in the movie Battlefield Earth, which is just a terrible, terrible movie and a terrible performance, but so much fun and so ridiculous and so over the top. And that's kind of how I felt about Mission Earth as well. It's the only time in like the four albums that I listened to that L. Ron Hubbard's music, A, sounded like actual music, and B, sounded like it was being done by professionals and not a bunch of lunatics.
Well, this is from 1986's Mission Earth, Edgar Winter doing L. Ron Hubbard's Just a Kid. Edgar Winter and Company doing Just a Kid from the L. Ron Hubbard album Mission Earth, 1986, one of four L. Ron Hubbard-themed records that Nathan Rabin writes about in his piece for Slate.com. Nathan's with me via Skype on Soundcheck today. You mentioned John Travolta. He actually appears on a later. There are a couple of other more explicitly kind of dogmatic Scientological records, right? That L. Ron Hubbard
made. Right. I mean, they're basically the two albums that we've talked about are basically science fiction albums, and you know, pretty poor examples of the form. And then the other two albums that I kind of wrote about are the Scientology equivalent of gospel albums, where these are albums and music and songs to espouse his ideas, to kind of convert the.
Your dog?
sorry about that. Yeah, he gets upset when I say negative things about John Travolta. So basically, the other two albums were basically created to proselytize, to spread L. Ron Hubbard's music and ideas to other people and to convert them into the faith. And Scientologists in 1986 were encouraged to buy lots and lots of these albums. They were encouraged to buy them in bulk and then to give them to their friends. And the idea is that they would be so in love with these songs and these music and their ideas that they would want to know more about Scientology. And the first song on the album combines three of the hottest talents of Scientology in 1986. John Travolta at probably the low ebb in his life and his career. Frank Stallone, everybody's second favorite Stallone brother, and Leif Garrett. Who was a Scientology for about 3.5 minutes in between bottoming out. And this album that was released, I think, after L. Ron Hubbard died is unbelievably fascinating. And the lyrics on it, you really do believe that they're written by L. Ron Hubbard because they do not sound like music at all. Mm. And if they were created by ghostwriters, they were created by professionals, they would sound a lot more like sanity and a lot less like the ravings of a madman.
Well, now, you know, here's the thing, Nathan. I mean, we're talking a lot about, you know, L. Ron Hubbard writing this weird music, weird text, poetry, right, whatever. But it's other people that we're hearing performing. Don't you have any moment here where we can actually hear the man himself?
On the album of the L. Ron Hubbard and Friends album, there's this huge, like, incredibly flattering, almost glamour shot picture of L. Ron Hubbard on the back. And for a Scientologist, that would be almost worth the price of admission themselves, because here was this man who had gone into seclusion years and years ago, this mythic figure, and then here is a picture of him, and then the album actually ends with the voice of L. Ron Hubbard himself. And it's really, really fascinating because it sounds so processed and it sounds so synthesized that it sounds unearthly. It sounds like... Not only does it not sound like L. Ron Hubbard, this does not sound like a human being. This sounds like something that was created by a robot. And again, the lyrics that L. Ron Hubbard sings at the end of this album, they're so, I think they're supposed to be humble or spiritual, and they come off as just unbelievably arrogant and smug. And yeah, if you could play it.
Yeah, I think we'll leave our listeners in the capable hands of L. Ron Hubbard himself.
Yes.
The Road to Freedom is the name of the record. L'Envoy, thank you for listening. The final track featuring the voice of L. Ron Hubbard. And we've been hearing the voice of Nathan Rabin, who wrote this piece for Slate.com called L. Rock Hubbard, Revisiting the Curious Career of the Ultimate Cult Musician. It's on our website, the link at soundcheck.org. Nathan, great to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you as well.
Listening, I write just for you, but others hearing this may find things they would argue.
Thanks for listening. Stay connected by subscribing to the Soundcheck podcast on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and download the new WNYC mobile app for free. See you next time. I'm John Schaefer.
If they believe quite otherwise, it still will have impact. Is truth, and if they then decide to live with lies, that's their concern, not mine, my friend. They're free to fantasize.